Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. It is Friday. We are gearing up for our fifth game day Saturday of the week, of the season. This is a little bit of a light week five, as we've touched on earlier in the podcast. And so I actually am very, very pleased to be able to introduce to you, the listeners, the newest member of our CBSSports.com college football team. He comes to us from the Minnesota Vikings beat, just coming back home to where he belongs. It's Jeremy Fowler. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, and we are very, very happy to have you at CBSSports.com.
Of course, man. I appreciate you having me. I've paid my exclusive fee to be a Chip Patterson card-carrying member.
Well, it's not a super exclusive club. I hand out lots of cards right there. But let's start off for the listeners and also a little bit for me too. Why don't you give a little bit of a history of sort of where you've come along the way, because you were covering Florida before Minnesota, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I was covering the Florida Gators for the Orlando Sentinel from, I want to say, 2008 to 2010. And then I headed up to take a job at the St. Paul Pioneer Press out of St. Paul, Minnesota, covering the Vikings. At the time, they were one of the hottest teams and had Brett Favre coming back and were going to make a Super Bowl run. And then the two full seasons I covered, they won 9 games combined, including a 3-13 campaign. So things are bleak, but it looks like they're a little better this year. My last game was the Vikings-San Francisco 49ers game last week. The Vikings won, and then I jumped into this job this week.
I'll tell you what, that was so kind of the Vikings to send you off with arguably the best performance that they could have had in that game. I was blown away. I mean, the Vikings look as good as, you know, arguably anybody in the North right now.
Yeah, I was honestly pretty shocked. I mean, it made sense that on my last day they would do something like that after all the losing, just, you know, because that's typically how things like that work, you know. But
yeah.
I was a little shocked because I knew they'd be a little better. There's nowhere to go but up from 3-13. But I mean, they were impressive in all facets. It was pretty surprising. I mean, a lot of it just depends on Christian Ponder, as I'm sure you remember watching him at FSU, and he was pretty erratic last year. But he's a very bright guy, and so he had a full off season to really sink his teeth into the offense, and it's paid dividends for him. He's playing really well.
Yeah, he does a lot of things very, very well that I think he gets undersold for, including being able to make some plays with his feet when he needs to. He's an athletic guy. And a lot of his time at Florida State, I mean, he had all his last year, he just had that elbow. It was, what was it, like a sack? It was a strange medical, like, sack, and it just bothered him all season. And so it is, I'm not shocked at all to see him succeeding at the next level. He's a class guy. I know that you enjoyed covering him.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he had a medical sack, or I don't know if that's the medical term for it. I don't like it. Exactly. And I think he had some shoulder problems too. I mean, he was kind of a mess there last year at FSU, but kind of derailed his potential Heisman campaign. Yeah. I certainly don't think at this point he's Aaron Rodgers by any means, but I think his model coming in was being able to take a couple steps to his left or right and throw off his feet while he's moving, like Rodgers does. That's kind of his thing. I thought Ponder's that would be maybe Ponder's blueprint for success, and he looked really good doing that the other day against San Francisco, where before he would just wait in the pocket too long and let defenders collapse on him. Now he's escaping at the right time, moving in the pocket, but not having to just scramble for yards and throwing on the run.
In your time sort of away, I know you've only spent 1 week sort of getting plugged back in. And for the listeners who don't know, there really is sort of a level of plugging in and unplugging, especially when you get to really in-depth. And being a college football insider like Jeremy Fowler is for us, what are some of the biggest differences, or just sort of in general in the landscape, that you've seen from 2009 to now sort of plugging back in and getting back into the circles in 2012?
Sure. Well, I'm trying to compare if Louisville is supposed to be in 8 or 9 different conferences at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much catching up to realignment. I've just been trying to just call around and live on the phone for a while and get to know really what's going on. And, you know, I mean, it seems like college football is at a moment of stability a little bit, or maybe has a little breathing room with the realignment situation, but then you never know. It could take off in a lot of different areas too. So, it's just a lot of uncertainty there, and just the big business of college football. It's I like the NFL and college football for different reasons. You know, college is, it seems like a more about the topics.
Right.
There's just so many topics involved, you know, at a national level with each conference, but it's also about obviously the spirit of the fans. I think fandom in the NFL is a lot different, where, you know, it's very fantasy driven now, and games are so expensive. You know, I don't know if they're the same diehard fans that go to every game. I mean, there's still a lot of that, but it's just a different dynamic. You know, it's just this $9 billion business that's driven by so many areas, where college football, you know, there's still that spirit of the game, the tailgating that you see, that's kind of at a different level, especially in the South.
What are some of your favorite stadiums and sort of game day experiences that you're looking forward to getting back into this season?
Yeah, you know, really anywhere. I'm eager to see where I'm going. I got a couple games mapped out, but it's still kind of a week-to-week basis because I'm jumping in late September. But, you know, I'll be at Georgia, Tennessee this weekend. I've never been to a game in Athens. I'd love to get back to the Swamp at some point. And, you know, just anywhere, you know, Death Valley. But even games out west, I mean, this is a good chance for me to just soak up every atmosphere there is. I mean, I've never been to Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
So just, you know, I'll take any and all opportunities at this point. But, you know, it's hard to beat LSU for atmosphere. It's hard to beat Florida. But, I mean, there's so many of them. You know, Big Ten country, too. I'd like to see some of those.
You mentioned you've got, of course, Georgia and Tennessee. That's where Jeremy will be this coming weekend, so be sure that you're following him, Jay Fowler CBS, on Twitter. He'll have all the latest game day updates from Between the Hedges. What are some of the – a lot of people are looking at, you know, can Tyler Bray single-handedly put Tennessee's offense on his back? Where do you see this game playing out? And, you know, of course, Ogletree and Rambo will be back for Georgia's defense. What's your read on this game, and what are you looking forward to seeing in person?
Sure. You know, it seems like to me that Tennessee will have to make at least a few big plays between Tyler Bray and his explosive receivers, because I just don't know if I'd trust that defense wholeheartedly just yet after what happened against Florida. And Tennessee could surprise me, but yeah, you know, I think it's going to be a pretty close game, but I think Georgia will be okay and they'll go 5-0. Just, you know, the defense has held together even without Rambo and Ogletree. So to get those two guys back will be a major boost. Plus, that offense is rolling. One question that I have is with Aaron Murray. I mean, you know, he's been, you know, his ascension has been steady, but I don't know if he really has a lot of marquee wins. And I don't even know if Tennessee is a marquee win, but he just needs to show in fierce SEC competition that he can get it done.
Yeah, I think that Georgia is a little bit, you know, if it's possible for a number five team in the country, they're a little bit flying under the radar, because everyone wants to talk about the resurgence of the SEC East, which certainly is a big deal for LSU and Alabama, particularly if either one of these teams want to go undefeated. Beating the SEC East in the Georgia Dome in December is going to be difficult. And I'm wondering, how is Georgia flying under the radar a little bit?
You know, I wonder if it's because just in years past, they're hard to peg as, say, a top 3 to 5 team, because they always have at least one or two of those mid-season flubs, or, you know, they always have trouble beating Florida. You know, they're always kind of on the outside looking in. And so, you know, they're easy to underestimate now. I mean, Rick's been there long enough where he's certainly, I mean, you got to credit a guy for being anywhere at a big program for a decade plus. He's managed to kind of survive. And so, I think because of that, he's not necessarily a hot name. He's easy to overlook. And so, you know, I'm not saying Georgia's going to go undefeated, but I really think they're positioned for a run here. I mean, this could be Rick's best chance. You know, if you win this week, you're 5-0, and you don't have to play Bama or LSU, and you have a really potent offense. I think they have five different receivers that have – there are five different playmakers between running backs and receivers, only through four games, that have at least – 260 yards and at least 2 touchdowns. I mean, you know, they're spreading the ball well. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do, but they can still afford to get maybe one loss and still be in that picture if they can get to Atlanta and beat LSU or Alabama.
Yeah, two of those playmakers that obviously, you don't need to tell you to keep your eye on them, but Two boys from North Carolina, Todd Gurley and Keith Marshall. That 1-2 true freshman running back punch. Gurley from Tarboro, North Carolina. Marshall from right here in Raleigh. It has been very, very cool to watch those guys leave, because I'll tell you, that is one of the biggest mistakes that the ACC coaches, the coaches here in North Carolina, letting those two players, who are the top two running backs, you know, Gurley's one of the best running backs in the nation, letting them out of the state was an incredible mistake, because they are showing right now at Georgia, after enrolling early, that they were ready to play from day one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now, you know, a team like Georgia, you can employ that NFL model of having two really good backs. You know, sometimes you have one, you're so reliant on that player to get it done, you know, and if they get injured, like Marcus Lattimore, if he gets hurt again, you know, I mean, South Carolina has some decent depth, but you just never know. But these guys have two really quality backs, which will be huge, I think, later in the year if a guy gets hurt.
From what you've seen so far this year, and obviously we will get the opportunity to see each of these games play out, in Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, who are you giving an edge to right now as far as having the best chance to wind up in Atlanta?
You know, I'm really giving it to Georgia. I'm sticking to the Bulldogs at this point. I like Florida's resurgence from last year. I just wonder, you know, I don't know. I just need to see more from them. It's other than Tennessee, they haven't really played anybody yet either. But, you know, Driscoll has really improved a lot, but I still don't know if he's explosive enough to win consistently. That defense looks pretty stingy. I like their playmaking ability, but they're still susceptible in some areas to giving up some touchdowns. But I don't know. That'll be a great game, though. Florida Georgia is always a great game, but I think especially this year you have teams that are young in some areas, and, you know, you have Will Muschamp dynamic now. You know, if he can really establish himself, you know, with a top 10 program, that'll be huge for the Gators. I mean, obviously they don't want another Ronzook repeat. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, but I'm going to give the edge to Georgia right now. I just think that depth top to bottom and the experience of quarterback will really help them.
Did you get a chance to catch Florida State Clemson?
I did, yeah. And my first thought was, hey, it's great that everybody thinks Florida State's back and all that, but, you know, with these teams putting up 40, 50, 60 points on each other, the defense is so questionable to me. I just don't know if you can go into an SEC game and say a title game if FSU were to get there, you know, if you can really produce against Bama or LSU. Yeah, that was my thought. It's like if you're up in the 40, 50, 60, you're not going to win that way here. But, you know, FSU was impressive. I mean, they just have so many athletes. They've recruited well, you know, for the last 2-3 years. And so now it's finally paying off. And, you know, Clemson, I mean, obviously they're good offensively, but you know, that defense really got torched.
Yeah. Now that's we saw Clemson's secondary is arguably one of the weaker points on their defense. Their defense is not one of the ACC's best defenses yet. They're still very young, very inexperienced. And just Florida State has that, you know, Chris Thompson, EJ Manuel, force on the ground. Offensive line is getting better, but the thing that's always amazed me is there's just a stable of, like you said, just talented, big wide receivers, and a lot of them are all from, like, Belgrade, Florida. It's a lot of in-state guys that are just tall, big hands, fast, and, you know, you look at Rodney Smith, Rashad Green, Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, they go, like, five deep right there. I love the fact that Manuel seems to have all the tools in place right now, so that it's, even though he did produce 380 or 480 total yards of offense against Clemson himself, he doesn't necessarily have to bear everything because there's enough talent around him.
Sure, and I think that's the difference this year for them, is that he's finally got it locked and loaded depth around him, where before, I don't know if he had that. Maybe he could have had a better year last year. I know he's had some injuries too, but you know, this is the year where it seems like everything's finally coming together for that offense. And defensively, I mean, there's still a lot of talent. I just want to see a little bit more from them. But yeah, I like that linebacker Christian Jones. I mean, I saw him just, you know, he keeps covering Sammy Watkins downfield on a play and was able to stop him. I mean, to have that kind of versatility at linebacker is huge.
Well, yeah, Christian Jones is just phenomenal. The way that guy can fly across the field is unreal. I think I've watched entire Florida State games over again just looking for number 7. Like, hold on, hold on, hold on. Where is he? Where did he start the play? And where'd he finish? Okay, that's insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's
versatile.
Yeah, let's take a look at another team that, you know, there's, you're starting to hear murmurs about back, you know, but it, the thing that is for sure is that Texas has bounced back at least. But are you seeing the makings of a new era for Mack Brown? Because ever since he lost that title game to Alabama, he said he wanted to change the way he recruits, change the way he sort of builds his team. He's got a very SEC-style model with the three really, really good running backs that can pound the ball and a phenomenal defense. Is this the beginning of a new chapter of Texas football, or do you think that we're just, because it's Texas, people are anxious to give him that boost?
You know, I think it's probably a little bit of both, Chip. I mean, I think that Mack Brown has no choice but to really rebuild it after some recent struggles. I think he's smart to kind of redefine how he approaches things. I think that's why he's been around so long, is because he's been able to adapt. I like some of the things I've seen from Ash, the quarterback, but they still really haven't really played anybody. I mean, New Mexico, Wyoming, Ole Miss, those are all pretty easy wins. I mean, putting 66 on an SEC team should be given some credit, you know, but Ole Miss isn't exactly LSU at this point. So, yeah, I don't know. I need to see a little bit more, but I mean, they got a tough stretch coming up. I mean, even before they see Oklahoma, they got to go against Oklahoma State in Stillwater and then face West Virginia, which is right now a top 10 team. So, you know, I think that work cut out for them at this point. We'll really see what they're made of in the next 3 weeks.
One of the first stories that you reported on for us at CBSSports.com had to do with the Arkansas coaching situation. And John L. Smith, he was only given a 10-month contract. I think it's fair to say that he will not be the coach in 2013. At least that's I'd put my money there. Are some of the things?
You put a million there.
I could put a couple paychecks, maybe even a salary on it.
There you go.
All right, well, so what are you hearing about Arkansas's plans as far as who they're looking at and when they would be deciding to announce the next coach? Does John L. Smith even get the opportunity to finish this season?
I think he will. I think he'll get the chance to finish it. And based on what the AD, Jeff Long, said to a group of boosters this week, is that, you know, he can just make a change mid-season. You know, and it sounds like he wants to let him finish, which is the right move. I don't know what it solves to put an intern assistant in there for the final few weeks. I just don't know if that's enough to make a difference. And you know, to be honest, I think they can squeak out a few wins. They have a tough stretch, and they got A&M coming up, but they still have a lot of offensive weapons. They just can't really play any defense, and they have trouble blocking people, but. You know, if you give Tyler Wilson some time, I think they'll be okay. You know, get the ball to Chris Gregg, Kobe Hamilton, and those guys, and you know, they have enough talent to maybe finish 500.
That is insane to think about, considering a team that was number three in the BCS in November last year. All the weapons they're bringing back. I mean, do you trace it all back to the Louisiana Monroe loss, or do you trace it back to Petrino, or is this? How long in the making is this collapse been, or is it just, you know, an unfortunate series of events?
You know, it's probably a combination. I think some of the problems they had, though, were based on Petrino's recruiting, in the sense that up front they're pretty weak right now, and defensively, I mean, they're ranked 110th, I think, in scoring defense. So that can't all be on John L. Smith, you know. But that being said, I mean, you have to instill confidence in your team. You have to create an identity for your team, and you got to coach them up. And it sounds like they're failing in all three areas right now. So it's probably a combination of both, but maybe their value was a little overinflated in the offseason, even before Petrino was fired.
Oh yeah. Well, Paul Haynes was brought in to fix the defense, and it doesn't look like anything has been fixed on the defensive side of the ball. Gary Nova is improving as a quarterback, but Gary Nova is not a 397-yard, 5-touchdown quarterback right now, especially against an SEC defense. I wonder if – do you have any idea, or would you – is it too early to speculate about where they might look as far as the next head coach at Arkansas?
Boy, I mean, I don't think it's ever too early now, you know.
Yeah.
It's late September, and we're talking about several coaches at this point. Even, you know, people throwing Derek Dooley's name or names of several coaches, Kirk Ferentz, although I don't think he's going anywhere because he's got such a huge buyout, you know. But, yeah, there are some options. I mean, you got to look around. I'm sure a guy like Charlie Strong might get some looks. I mean, he's a guy that waited in the wings for a long time at Florida, had several interviews, nothing really worked out for him until he got the Louisville job, and he's shown why he was an attractive option in the first place. I think that's a place they'll look. I think they'll typically look at the hot coordinators out there. But yeah, I mean, that, you know, maybe a Dan Mullen to throw his name in the mix. It's hard to identify exactly at this point, but we got to keep tabs on it because these programs and these ADs are looking earlier and earlier, you know, especially in a situation like this where it's already established that John Olsen is probably not going to be there. It's not like he's under a 5-year contract. So, yeah, I mean, those, you know, Mullen and Strong are two names that intrigue me, but I'm sure it won't be limited to that. There'll be a lot of guys out there.
What makes Mississippi State to Arkansas a big enticing to Mullen? It seems to me, and I haven't really sort of dug into Mullen's background, but it seems to me like he's working on building something at Mississippi State, and I don't know if moving to a division rival would necessarily be a step up unless it was a money issue.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not like you're going to Notre Dame or Florida, but it is – I think it would be a slight step up. I think you can recruit easier. You can recruit Texas. I think you can just get more talent in there. I mean, what Mullen's been able to do at Mississippi State, I know it's early in the year and they could still collapse, but what they've been able to do has been impressive considering, you know, you're just limited in some ways recruiting-wise. And, you know, Mississippi has some talent, but it's not like Texas. And so I think you can maneuver better and you can probably get yourself a nice chunk of change a little more than what you're making. But Mississippi State, you know, they got a good system up there. They might try to keep him. And it's early to say he's even in the mix for that kind of thing at this point. We don't know that. But, I'm with you in the sense that he is seeming to be building something in Mississippi State. I just don't know about sustaining long-term success. Might be a little tough there. I mean, you can win 7-8 games, go to bowls, things like that, but to really be a major player in the national title landscape is a little bit tougher. It'd be easier at Arkansas.
Yeah, I got you. All right, Jeremy, I'm going to ask you one thing about yourself that listeners may not know that you think would be intriguing for them to know as they begin to follow you back on the college football beat.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I love basketball. I absolutely love it. Wish I played basketball. I think I'm disillusioned as a mediocre rec league baller.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of my sport as far as just an outlet and, you know.
I love
the game and I play pretty often, so.
Yeah, no, I'm right with you there. That's awesome to hear. I am too, very, very passionate. Love to play. Grew up in North Carolina. You start playing basketball pretty early, and
I'm sure out of the womb.
Yeah, pretty much. And it was, and I am very, very, very mediocre and very, very passionate about my play. So we should, next time we're together, we should hoop a little bit.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm definitely a defense, rebound, make the right pass. Always want to make each possession artful. Want to make sure that we're getting the ball to the right guy in the right place. Not much of a deep shooter. I am not much of a deep shooter. What's the best part of your game?
Well, I'm 6'4.5" or so, so I typically get shoved in the post and have to rebound. I mean, I'm pretty much rebounding every time I'm at my desk.
Oh, yeah.
My game. But I'm freaky. I can shoot the three a little bit, but it's very erratic. You know, like I can get hot and be a good jump shooter, but then I think I'm a jump shooter, and then I'm not consistent. So I try to bang around in the post and go from there, so.
So Don Nelson would have loved you because of your Rasheed Dirk-like tendency to drift away from the hoop. Because in rec league basketball, 6'4" is like 6'10".
Yeah, pretty much. But then, you know, in high school or college ball, 6'4" is 6'4".
Yeah.
So that's the problem.
Yeah.
But my son, my wife's 5'10", so my son is, my one-year-old's pretty big. So we're going to get him some coaching here early, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we already know he's going to be big, so teach him some guard skills.
You've got to get him out there with the uh, The Jason Williams garden gloves and wrist weights at a young age, yep. So he can just have the nastiest Absolutely. Handles in the land.
Absolutely.
All right.
That's the plan.
Yeah. All right, Jeremy. Well, I appreciate you hopping on the podcast. We will be sure to do this several more times during the season. Remember to follow Jeremy on Twitter at JFowlerCBS, and you can get his stories on CBSSports.com. He will be at Tennessee at Georgia in Athens this weekend. So be sure to follow him. And, Jeremy, enjoy the first game weekend with CBSSports.com.
Awesome, Tibble. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, folks, enjoy the weekend.